Angelina and Juan Rios have a most unusual family. They have 8 children, and 5 of them have been diagnosed with autism. Angelina says that caring for the kids was sometimes just about more than she could manage, until she found a musical answer. The afternoon that they all of them, sat down to listen to the Star Wars theme on the radio was a turning point for the Rios family. Pretty soon, the kids were watching movies more closely, reading subtitles, imitating gestures, and almost before Angelina knew it, they were setting aside some of the solitude of their autism and connecting with the world. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Story.
The Story is produced by North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. It's co-produced and distributed by American Public Media.
They say that autism is the fastest-growing developmental disability in the U.S. today. And it's a disorder that takes many forms. Kids have trouble with language, they don't often play well with others, and they get fixated on certain actions or objects. And there's a lot of controversy about autism as well. People argue over its link to childhood vaccinations and how to treat it. Angelina and her husband Juan live in Kingsville, in Texas. They have 8 children, 5 of them with autism. Now, neither parent works outside the home. Caring for the kids is a full-time job for both of them. The roster goes like this. Their eldest, Victoria, does not have autism. She's 16, and she helps with the 5 kids who do have the disorder. And they are Juan, he's 13, Jesus is 12, Justo is 9, Angel is 8, and Margarita, she's 4. Angelina and Solomon, age 6 and 2, do not appear to have any symptoms. The mother, Angelina, says life at her house is chaotic, though she always tries to find a bit of time each Sunday to hear classical music on her local public radio station. It's not easy.
The kids would be constantly getting into their skirmishes, and you've seen those commercials on television, "I'm not touching you, I'm not touching you." Okay, we have this situation going with all of those kids with autism and different degrees of autism thrown in the mix. So it is very chaotic. And usually the tussling comes with the sibling that's right behind you. So Juan would be tussling with Jesus. Jesus will be tussling with Justo. Justo will be tussling with Angel. Angel will be trying to have an argument with Angelina, but Angelina had better command of the language, and so she would always win, and so that would add to his frustration. Then Angel would like to pick on his brother Jesus. He skips over Justo or Juan, and then you have, you know, all of this skipping and jumping. And so, yes, there was a need for constant intervention.
You skipped over Margarita and Solomon, the 2 infants.
Okay, yeah.
You're adding to the noise level.
Yes.
Take me back to a Sunday with all this going on. Would you just reach over and turn the radio up and turn it up?
Yeah, and actually on Sundays, that's my big laundry day.
So the radio's near the laundry machine, is it?
It's in the area of the house where I had the laundry machine. It's just that it's in my bedroom, but what I did is I had all the clothes put in there, so I'm washing, taking clothes out to the line, and bringing clothes in from the line, and fold it from outside because you have the nice warm sun, and so you have no wrinkles there. So I'm organizing the clothes, I'm gathering the clothes, I'm washing the clothes, and the radio on in the middle of all of my activity. And the kids are either watching their movie or fighting, and the older ones are playing outside.
Angelina tried to get her kids interested in the classical music, but they wanted nothing to do with it. As Angelina was telling me, they pretty well stuck to their movies. 13-year-old Juan liked Star Wars, and one day, that led to an argument.
I was telling him that the music that you listen to in Star Wars is classical. You have your cellos, you have your orchestra, you have your conductor, and that is classical. And he said, "No, that's not classical." Because he was giving me the most resistance.
So why would you try to make the case to him that the John Williams music, the Star Wars music, is classical music? Trying to get him interested? Is that what you were thinking?
Well, yeah, that was one of the tricks. To get him interested into the music. And also to win the argument that this is truly classical music. And classical music isn't boring. That was another big issue.
Right.
Classical music isn't boring.
At this point, Angelina felt that she had to turn to a higher authority. So she called up Orfeo. He works at her public radio station, KEDT. He's the one who was doing a classical music request show each Sunday.
I called him and I asked him, "Isn't Star Wars and Jaws classical enough?" And this is sort of a halfway, this is somewhat of a dare. and my husband's there. We're all in the living room. We have the stereo there in the living room. So we turn off the television. We sit everybody down. We had the radio on. Then Orfeo comes on the air. After he does the station thing, he says, and for all you young listeners, or he said, for all you kids out there, I'm going to be playing Star Wars. And then he opens up with Episode 1, Duel of the Fates. Everybody was spellbound in the room, including Margarita, that was an infant in the high chair. Her mouth was open. Victoria, my oldest one, her mouth was open, and Juan and Jesus were at the, all of the kids were at the edge of their seats. And Orfeo went from one episode to the other. The station didn't have Episode 5. We're still working on that. And the kids, and even my husband, were absolutely still. They listened for the whole thing, without moving, without getting up.
What were you thinking as you watched this?
This is great.
Clearly.
And I think my daughter Victoria was like saying to herself, I don't believe it. I don't believe it.
But did you think it would have this effect, Angelina, on them?
No, I didn't expect for them to be held that long. You know, I wanted to end the argument and then have them at least build a tolerance for classical music. You know, but this... You know, they weren't sitting back in the chair. They were, you know, head forward like you're watching a suspense film. Their eyes were glued to the radio. They were glued to the speaker. And they didn't budge. They didn't move. They didn't fight. They weren't hungry. They weren't thirsty.
What you're describing is like kids listening to the old radio dramas of the 30s and the 40s, right? Before television.
It was similar to that, very similar to that.
What was your conclusion about that Sunday, though, when you watched the hold that that music had over a family which was normally sort of banging off, you know, each other and the walls and everything?
Bouncing off of the walls.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
What was your conclusion?
I can't tell you the time when they had Valentine candy. They were all airborne, hands and feet in the air, flying across the room. Anyway, what I did is I called up Orfeo and I said, success, success. Let's do it again for next Sunday. I was ecstatic. I was able to accomplish, because we're talking a large family going through all these different schools. I have to go through all those uniforms and pair up all of those socks. and so I was able to accomplish my laundry goals, which is a big thing for me. That's big business for Sunday. My Sundays were rolling a lot smoother after that. But I wasn't expecting for them to be able to hold it for that long. They got pulled in, they were drawn into the music, and they weren't just sitting back and relaxing. I mean, they were pulled in, completely spellbound.
Angelina noticed that over the next few days, her children began watching their movies with much greater attention. And then she started playing DVDs with the subtitles showing.
Juan and Jesus were looking at the script. Jesus was memorizing the script, and he was learning to read quickly. And he was able to keep up with the words and the dialogue. And at that time, his reading skill improved a whole lot. Juan was looking at the expression on the characters' faces. And he was looking at a larger view of how the characters were interacting, the situation, and especially their facial expressions.
This is a big deal for kids with autism, right? Because they don't normally take the kind of social interactive cues that a facial expression will give.
Yeah, and that is a major deficit. What Juan was doing is he was watching those characters very closely, and he was imitating their faces, and he started imitating their faces at school, especially when he was frustrated or angry. He would copy them to the T.
Since taking such an interest in the link between music and image and word, Juan Rios has improved considerably in his test scores and social skills. I asked him, with the help of his mom Angelina, to tell me what he liked about Star Wars.
I like, what was that at the end with Obi-Wan and Anakin, the fight?
Oh, okay, that's in Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith?
The
Battle of the Heroes?
Battle of the Heroes and the little Ewoks.
Okay.
And
you know Duel of the Fates as well, Juan? Do you know that piece of music? I think that's Episode 1, right?
It's Darth Maul.
You mean that guy with the ugly face?
Yeah, that guy with the paint on his face.
He's scared. He has, what are those things? He has
horns.
Horns. He's a Sith Lord. The very ugliest man.
Who's your favorite Star Wars character, Juan?
Anakin.
Juan, I have one more question for you. When you started to listen to the music from Star Wars on the radio, not watching on videos, but when you started to listen to it on the radio, why do you like that?
You know, I like the ones that they fight and to save the princess, like, what was her name?
There's Leia in Episode 4.
Oh, yeah, Queen Amidala in Episode 1.
Okay, so you like it when people are like heroes, right?
Yeah, but I like heroes, and what about villains?
You like them too?
Mm-hmm.
Are they interesting to you? They look like interesting people that you want to get to know or just learn more about?
Learn more about anything.
And this was just the beginning. Eventually, all the Rios kids got hooked on movie music. The composer John Williams is a favorite. He also did Jurassic Park and Jaws and E.T. and Harry Potter. And all that music has become a part of the family, a way for the children to overcome the effects of their autism. I'm Dick Gordon from American Public Media. This is The Story. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Story. I'm talking today with Angelina Rios. She has 5 children with autism. Since she started exposing her kids to film scores, classical themes from movies like Star Wars and Jurassic Park, Angelina has noticed a dramatic improvement in the children's attention span and their test scores. We'll talk more about that transformation in just a minute. I wanted to hear a bit more about the family story. Angelina says that she and Juan have been together since college. They always had nieces and nephews around, but they didn't seem to be able to have their own children.
We just weren't having children. I guess my factory was closed. And every time when I thought I had it, we get worked up, and no, it didn't happen. So when I finally thought it was happening, I secretly bought a test, one of those, I call it the first alert pregnancy test. And I got a really good movie. I got Arachnophobia, so that nobody will pay attention to what I was doing. Arachnophobia works, folks.
It's a spider movie, right?
Yeah. And the test was positive. I called my husband over. First, I had to pull him away from the movie and the pizza.
How many people were you living with at the time?
2 nephews and my sister-in-law, and there's my husband. It's just that they were all solely drawn in to Arachnophobia in the movie. And so I had to practically drag him out of there. I need to talk with you alone. Can it wait? No, it can't. Well, what do you want to talk about? It has to be private. Can it be later? And I said, no, you have to come immediately now. And then my sister-in-law says, what is it? Oh, nothing, just watch the movie. It's something I need to talk with Juan. And so it took me a while for me to yank him out. And I pulled him over, and we're in a room by ourselves. I show him the pregnancy test, the positive pregnancy test. And he sat still, and he didn't say a word. He was like in disbelief for maybe about an hour. It was nice, but I mean, we've been disappointed so many times before.
Yeah. And this is Victoria, right? This was your first child.
This was Victoria. Yeah, we had already accepted ourselves to be a childless couple.
Huh.
And maybe our mission was to take care of the nieces and nephews. And when they're grown, if we're still childless, we would probably foster or adopt. So we had already resigned ourselves as being a childless couple.
What was the point at which, Angelina, you first discovered that there was some autism in the family? Did this happen early on? Did it come much later? How did that work out?
No, that's not how it worked out. Juan, first, he had a phenomenal gift. He was like 1.5. He's throwing these balls up in the air, any size balls, and he would hit them with a stick on his own. He could run really fast. Victoria was running really fast. The family was calling her the Velociraptor.
So you have two at this point, Victoria and Juan, right?
Yeah, and I'm very tired. You see, Victoria would be up 16 to 18 hours a day without a nap, but she was pleasant. I think one time one of the doctors approached me and said, well, what if I give her some to have her go to sleep and you can rest better? If there's any drugs to be prescribed, prescribe it to me because I need to stay awake.
And Juan has
Juan
these
comes
tantrums,
along,
right?
And then Jesus comes. He started developing the tantrums at about maybe 18 months to 2 years. You know, we call it unofficial, but he became the tantrum king of Children's Mercy Hospital. There's a reason why he was a tantrum king. When we went to the pediatric care center in Kansas City, of course, we had to separate. Daddy, Juan Sr., was out in the parking lot with Jesus in the stroller, and I had to bring in Victoria because she had a little spider bite or something, and so she was going to see her doctor there. I brought in Juan with me. So I had Victoria and Juan. Daddy had, you know, Jesus as an infant. He was unloading him in the cart and kind of like keeping him in his stroller outside in the parking garage. Juan started having a fit because he couldn't decide who he wanted to be with, and he was getting frustrated that he couldn't express it. So he started yelling and screaming and rolling on the floor, and it started accelerating more, and he was yelling louder. And I was on the first or second floor, and my husband Juan heard him at the end of the parking lot. It would measure about a block away. Everybody in the building was hearing his screams. His screams were going through concrete and steel. My husband was hearing it a block away. And what I did to calm the other people inside the waiting area was when my son took a breath, I said, he's going to be a great opera singer.
But you had no suspicion of autism at this point, did you?
No, but the doctor was saying that he definitely had something. He told us, don't even think about putting him into regular daycare. He would start throwing out his arms, rolling on the floor, yelling, screaming, or he would start by biting a piece of flesh off of me. Huh. I got used to it, so I didn't feel it. We definitely could not leave him with a babysitter. It had to be one of us to be with him.
I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Story. In the end, it wasn't Juan who introduced the Rios family to autism. It was their third child, Jesus.
He wasn't verbal. He was out to sea. I noticed that he did like classical music when they played certain pieces on the station up there in Kansas City. He liked the Great Gate of Kiev. He stood up applauding. When the tenors were on one time, when they stopped singing, he would start crying.
Jesus is the one who had no real awareness of heat and cold and pain, that sort of thing?
Yes, yes. He liked to escape. The time he would like to escape is when we finish with a bath or something, so he would like to escape naked. And one time there was snow outside, and I'm bathing the children. He finds a way to get out, I guess, through the downstairs basement. He finds a way out. He's outside. All he's wearing is a smile. And one of the kids from the neighborhood, I get a knock on the door. The kid's smiling from ear to ear, says, Nature Boy's out there.
Nature Boy. And Mrs. Rios, your son is outside naked.
Yeah, Nature Boy's out there. Of course, I bring him in, and he didn't feel any cold under his feet when there was snow.
Yeah.
When I would be washing dishes, he wanted to put his hands in the water, and I have the water completely hot. I'm used to it. He wasn't feeling it at all. And so I had to make sure that, you know, he wasn't touching the heat, and then he didn't have any knowledge of danger, and that was creepy. In Kansas City, it's hilly, and so we're somewhat on a hill on an incline, so our kitchen door opens up to a terrace, and of course, it's flat. You can go straight out. However, the terrace makes about a 10 or 12-foot drop to a concrete driveway going into the basement because we're on a hillside,
yeah.
And there's this ledge. And Jesus would be out there with his unstrung shoes, and he's skipping and hopping and jumping along the edge, and he has no idea
how close he is to falling, you mean?
Yes,
yeah.
Or what it means to fall, because he's not feeling pain, so he can't process pain.
Right, and no awareness of danger for that reason.
Yeah, I would have my husband or my daughter running down the stairs, you know, through this basement and getting just below him while I go outside, and I don't go right next to him. I don't want to startle him. I go out to where, you know, he can see me, and I say, "Sweetie, come over here, sweetheart. Come to mommy." And you know, my heart is pounding. And, you know, I have to go against nature and trying to yell or call out.
Yeah, you don't want to lunge for him. You don't want to scare him off the edge, right?
Right. And so I'm trying to lure him away or getting close enough, but not too close, in which I can take his hand gently so he won't jerk away over to the front part where everything's flat. And that happened a number of times. And so, you know, this was totally creeping me out. When we moved down here to South Texas, the land was flat. And that gave me a big relief.
What was the time when you and Juan Sr. got the diagnosis that Jesus was autistic or had autism?
I know I was completely devastated. I knew that he had all the signs. What I wanted to hear, and I banked everything on this, was that he had a hearing problem.
Right.
And that this would be fixed and he would be okay. And that wasn't the case. And I had to go to work. I was working at the Treasury office in Kansas City, and even the bus driver knew there was something wrong, and it took me several hours of crying and me trying to pull myself together. And after that, we had to play it by ear. We had to have more testing at the school district where we were at, and we were getting more and more bad news. So our genius was not scoring well.
And after Jesus was diagnosed with autism, then you had Juan checked, and it turned out he had autism as well.
You know, we were suspicious, but we weren't expecting autism like Jesus. I mean, Jesus was stacking things, lining things up. He wasn't talking. He was in his own world. Juan was in a movie world. But, you know, we thought, well, he's a little kid. He has this active imagination. He's getting a good workout, so he's getting himself very healthy. We really weren't expecting Juan to have autism. We had a very difficult parenting task ahead of us, to say the least.
Yeah, and by the time you get the confirmation then that Jesus and Juan both have autism, Justo and Angel are part of your family already, right? So now you're up to a family of five, and I don't know, what are you thinking to yourselves at this point?
No, we're not expecting these kids to develop autism.
Okay.
It's not in our family. When we had the boys diagnosed and I was expecting, I went through genetic testing. So they did the blood work on me.
Yeah.
They did a complete family history, his complete family history, and the genetic testing was negative.
So you had no reason to believe that your children would have autism, right?
Right, because the genetic tests were negative.
Was there a point at which you and Juan said to yourselves, hey, maybe we should stop having children? I mean, this is a lot of work for us as parents.
Oh, no. We love the children too much. We have the baby, and there's a phase in where we completely fall in love with them. And whether or not they have a disability or if they have a third arm or a third leg, it doesn't matter to us. We're just so in love. I mean, the children are so beautiful. And they're funny. I mean, most of the time, it's funny. We are, you know, we're spending more time laughing than anything else. You know, just because they develop a disability, no, that doesn't go into it at all.
You're listening to The Story. I'm Dick Gordon. I'm talking with Angelina Rios about the moment when she discovered that classical music was helping her children with autism. Angelina says she didn't set out to discover a new therapy. The music was just a part of her life, something she'd enjoyed since she was a kid.
My father was a big lover of classical music. He was highly educated, especially for a Hispanic man in South Texas. He bought many, many records for his record player, the old big LP record player. He had an Admiral. He had many of the classical music works in these big albums that were in a plastic sheet. I guess it was green in color. And at first I wasn't completely tuning in to the classical music. But I'd say by the time I was in the fifth grade, I was already enjoying the music, although I didn't have much exposure. Except I was sick one day with my little brother, and we saw the television program Madame Butterfly. We're young children. We both got completely drawn into the opera, and we were in tears and all emotional. And every time I hear that big aria, and even my brother, although he won't admit it, we get all teary-eyed and and emotional.
So you would have developed an interest in the different artists and the different music really at quite a young age.
Yeah, because for one thing, my father was exposing us, and then Madame Butterfly hooked us in. That was one worthwhile day of absence from school.
So you've always had this affection for classical music.
Yeah. Since I've been raising the kids, I've been mostly exposed to Barney and Sesame Street. I've had so much of this cartoon lyrics and music and cuteness is that I've lost a lot of my mental fortitude as far as my knowledge of classical music.
It was Angelina Rios' desire to keep up her knowledge that led her to a search for the music. She found it on her public radio station in South Texas, KEDT, and that's what led her to the idea that it might have a transformative effect on her own children. The Sunday afternoon movie mixes became a regular event in her house. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Story. It was music from monster movies, thrillers like Jaws, Jurassic Park, and Godzilla that appealed to her two youngest kids with autism. Those two are Angel and Justo.
Justo was very timid. He was a timid little rabbit, and he was wired like a cat. He went up to the speaker. He put his ear up to the speaker, and he was straining to hear everything in the piece. And Angel started doing that too with the other speaker when the monster music jumped on. And everybody was quiet. They're at the edge of their seat because they've seen Jaws. We've played Jaws. We have a game where we play Jaws. My oldest daughter likes to use that because that's when she has dominion and control of the others, when she becomes the killer shark. But they never heard the whole piece from Jaws. They never heard the whole piece played.
What do you think was happening? Do you think that their imagination was filling in the pictures? Do you think that's why?
Definitely the imaginations were setting in, especially with the two younger boys who weren't very verbal. Angel started approaching me, and he was asking me a question. He would point to a book which had dinosaurs in it, and he would say something, and it was real hard for me to understand. And I finally figured out is, what dinosaur is that? But everything mumbled together like, that? What? And so he had to say over and over and point to me and bring the book and point to me. And it finally clicks to me, oh, what dinosaur is that? Yeah.
The point is he would not have tried to ask you that question.
Not really, or I didn't pick up on his cues. Justo and Angel grabbed the science books that we had there, especially the ones with dinosaurs, and Justo wanted sharks. And then he started wanting to get books on sharks. Of course, Grandma and Victoria started getting him books on sharks. Daddy was going and getting books on sharks from either half-price books or the thrift stores that we shop at. Justo all of a sudden started delivering lectures. You'll earn college credit when you hear his shark lectures, because in a short time he learned all of the species of sharks that swam in our waters right here.
But this is great for you, though, watching these kids develop this appetite for learning, right?
Yeah. The younger ones developed an appetite for learning very quickly.
It wasn't just Angelina paying attention to this. The doctors who run tests for the kids with autism also saw something changing. And I'll talk more with Angelina about what they found in just a moment. I'm Dick Gordon from American Public Media. This is The Story. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Story. Angelina Rios has 8 children. 5 of them, ranging in age from 13 to 4, have autism. Angelina says she's seen a remarkable change in the children since they started listening to music from classical movie scores. It took her a while before she saw the connection. Well, actually, it was the doctors who first noticed something was different. They saw that the test scores for the kids were going up, and they wanted to know why.
The therapist approached me. And, of course, I have all these kids. I'm in the waiting area. And I guess it's something like, why are they doing so good? And I said, well, we have an incentive program. They do well and behave with you. They go to Chuck E. Cheese. They went back in, and after a while, they come back in. They said, no, that's not it. There is something in your routine that has changed. And we need you to tell us what's going on. Something has changed. And I said, well, it's springtime. The kids are in baseball. And we work out a lot. We take the kids out and we work out a lot. And so they go back in. Then they come back and they said, look, it's not your workouts and it's not your incentive to Chuck E. Cheese. There is something else that is embedded in your routine and you have to tell us what it is. And, you know, like, and I just drew a complete blank. I had no idea at that moment. I said, well, I don't know. This is what we're doing. I really have to think about this. Yeah. And so they go back in and I'm just racking my brain. And then all of the therapists, you know, were jumping me. And it occurred to me, oh, yeah, we're doing this. I think this is it. On Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock on the classical music station, the DJ Orfeo plays their favorite movies on the radio. The classical scores. And then the therapist says, okay, well, next time what you do is when they play this radio show, I want you to watch and observe their behaviors closely and see what they are doing from the start of this show. So, you know, I'm completely caught by surprise.
Yeah. So the next Sunday, you're watching the kids listening to the radio, and what do you see? What can you report back to the therapists?
The first thing I told them is about how they listen very intensely to the music. And then they would play the DVD, and they would want to see the subtitles. And then during the week, they would prefer to play the movie that was from that broadcast.
So all they were doing would be hearing the film score from the movie just once on Sunday afternoon. And then all that week, they're watching the film, watching the dialogue, paying much closer attention to what's going on in the film.
And probably paying more attention also to the music.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I immediately thought, this is some sort of Mozart effect, but they have, you know, why are they tuning into this as opposed to the other music? And the only thing I can think of is that they have the visual reference. You know, I've already learned up to that point that these kids think in pictures. They act in pictures. Everything is visual. So they have a specific visual reference point to the music. And that's why they're tuning into this and not to the other music.
I'm still not clear why their test scores go up, though, as they connect the music to the films that they know.
Apparently, they have picked up a whole lot in their receptive and their expressive language. The receptive language, they can receive and understand instruction and be able to go through the session. The expressive language is then the ability to speak, form words, say words, verbally communicate to them.
Right.
Okay, so what I did is, since the children have to be tested every 6 months, I wanted to see the test results from, you know, the most recent one after the movie mix started to the six-month period before. And so I wanted to see how they were scoring because they have them on developmental scales.
And was it dramatic?
Yeah, especially in their articulation and their expressive language, the two younger boys. And they were very low functioning, very low verbal scores. I think they're at a three-year-old level, maybe three and a half. And then 6 months later, and none of the therapists are expecting this, okay?
Yeah.
They're expecting improvement, but not that much. And their articulation and their expressive language was all of a sudden went to age-appropriate levels.
And they're 8 and 9 now.
8 and 9, yeah.
Wow.
And in 6 months, that was a major change.
And anecdotally, how is it different around the Rios dinner table? I mean, do you notice a difference just in the way that all the kids relate to each other?
There's some things that remain the same. The sibling rivalry.
Yeah.
The you're not touching me. Juan is very much able, he's more fluent. He's much able to better express themselves. I think they're all better verbally expressing themselves. Justo and Angel and little Angelina, they would be spending their free time in the backyard digging up for snails and fossils. They're totally into science. You have to also remember that when the school district tested all of our children, all of our boys, their initial IQ scores when they were coming in were in the mental retardation range, very well within the mental retardation range.
And now?
They're not. Justo and Angel have the best prospect of being able to catch up with their peers academically because they're within a year or so behind their peers now instead of 3 or 4 or 5 years. They show the most promise.
And how much of this, Angelina, do you credit to the introduction of the movie Music Mix?
What the movies did, at the very least, inspired the younger ones to science and to start questioning, so they have to use verbal language.
Right.
This definitely did affect their verbal language. It improved a whole lot. Jesus is now able to tell you what he wants. You know, his autism is still very obvious.
Right.
But when you ask him a question, he can answer you. You can have a conversation. You might need some redirection, but you can actually have a conversation with the boy. And he was completely nonverbal till he was about, I'd say about 7 or 8. He really wasn't talking. The movie music affected their ability to communicate. Their ability to communicate has increased their chances for success in life immensely. Juan wants to be a movie maker, a filmmaker. He wasn't talking about that a couple of years ago. He was just trying to get through the day and trying to play baseball. Jesus wants to be a meteorologist. These kids want to go to college. Now, that didn't happen a couple of years ago. Justo, who was also technically nonverbal, wants to be a marine paleontologist. Angel is younger, and so he's our comic relief. He wants to be either a dinosaur digger or a farmer or maybe somebody who works at Chuck E. Cheese, but definitely wants to be something when he grows up. They are talking about their futures.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah.
Angelina Rios lives with her family in Kingsville, Texas. Special thanks today to the people at KEDT. That's the South Texas Public Radio station that plays the movie music and helped us arrange this conversation. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Story. A couple of weeks back, we had a guest on The Story who won a Silver Star for her heroic work as a combat medic. Army Specialist Monica Brown, all of 19 years old, had worked to save the lives of fellow soldiers when they were caught in an ambush in Afghanistan. The others who were there say she worked to save the lives while the mortars and the bullets kept coming in. Now, Gary Margolis heard the interview when it was on the program. Gary is the executive director of Middlebury College's Mental Health Services. He was also nominated for a Pulitzer Prize for poetry. And Gary wrote us to say that he was drawn to the sound of Monica's voice as she told the story of what happened in April 2007. That's when a Humvee in her convoy hit an IED.
The Humvee had caught on fire because the gas tank exploded, and the guys that were in the Humvee, there's five of them, were about 10 or 15 feet away. I saw that two of them were laying on their sides, but considering the firefight was still going on, we had to move them. We were up on high ground, and there was no cover for us anywhere. There was no trees, no rocks, no hills. It was just the riverbed and us, and so I had to move them to a different location to treat them.
Driving in my car, you know, here in Vermont, and then hearing her voice, you know, the clarity, the humbleness, the directness. And given that I work in a college counseling center here at Middlebury, where the voices of young men and women are so much, you know, a part of what I hear, her voice very much is the first thing in addition to the details of her experience. But it was her voice that really captured me and was quite moving.
Had burns on the majority of his body, and after I cut all his clothes off to see how bad they really were and found out that they were pretty much everywhere. So I dressed with what I could, which was out of my aid bag, but I didn't expect to treat an entire body covered in burns. And then I went over to Smith, the other guy that had lacerations on his head, and stopped the bleeding, got him dressed up, cleaned off his face, tried to keep him conscious the whole time, asking him questions, and he had burns on his hands as well, and shrapnel in his knee. The firefight was still going on. We were receiving incoming mortars.
Her tone, her way of expressing herself, you know, and also just the tenderness with which she was expressing her connection to her work and to her band of brothers. So her voice resonated from not only her story and what she had experienced, but very much that young voice right into the present.
And there's something else about the story that she told that actually touched you more directly, because you two actually share some experience.
Well, I graduated from college as a second lieutenant in ROTC and was being trained as a medical service officer, which included, you know, some basic medical training. And this was during the Vietnam era. And so hearing her describe, you know, in such detail her experience reminded me of some of the training that I had had, even though I was never even close to any combat like she has had. I served for 3 months stateside at Fort Sam Houston in San Antonio, Texas. But it was hearing her experience and in some ways remembering what I didn't have to do.
I didn't really notice anything that was going on around me. I mean, I knew that there was sounds of bullets zipping by me, but I didn't think about it at the time. I just worried about the guys. That's what we're trained to do, is when a patient's on the ground and I've stripped them of their IBA and clothing to find out how bad their injuries are, it's my duty to make sure that they're covered. And he's wide open with no protection. I didn't really think about myself at all.
Hearing her connection both to her training, her sense of responsibility, duty, and very much being in the moment of protecting and responding to her band of brothers. You know, the image that came to me was, you know, a young woman within the context of her work, but in some ways also, you know, her surrogate family and her sense of connection, you know, to them.
And I was holding Spray's hand, and he was shaking because he was in a lot of pain from the burns all over his body. And the look in his eyes was just, I'll remember that forever, because he was scared, but at the same time, I was holding Smith's forehead with my other hand trying to stop the bleeding because it was just pulling in the back of the truck, because the only way we could get him in there was face down. So I was holding Smith's forehead and holding Spray's hand with my other hand, and I was like, it's okay, we're going to be okay, we're going to get out of here. Then I was like, you know, Smith, tell me a story, tell me about your fiance, you know, talk to me, you know, tell me something, tell me a story. And so Spray was over there, and he's already in severe pain, and Spray's over there talking to Smith, you know, it's going to be okay, we're going to get out of here, you know, motivating him. And it's just to see a wounded soldier who's already in severe pain from burns trying to motivate and take care of another soldier is an emotional event for sure. I'll remember that forever.
That's the voice of Army Specialist Monica Lynn Brown, talking about her actions in Afghanistan that led to her being awarded a Silver Star. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Story. Gary Margolis is a poet whose work has been nominated for a Pulitzer Prize, and he was inspired to write a poem about her.
The way I would put it, Dick, is the poem seemed to want to write itself, that I kept hearing her voice inside in my own imagination and empathizing or trying to with the situation that she had been in. And again, I think, you know, the situation that I didn't have to be in, both in the past and presently. And, you know, I think for those of us who are here and who have friends, family members, and by extension, those who are serving for us, in some ways that does touch the imagination. So within a couple of days after having heard this, I was, you know, home alone. It was spring vacation here. And her voice seemed to be wanted to be spoken back to and honored and to thank her.
Let me ask you to read it for us.
The interview for Army Specialist Monica Lynn Brown, Silver Star winner. She says she wasn't thinking about herself. That's what adrenaline and duty will do. She covered the wounded bodies with hers. She was wearing body armor no one could see through. War's negligee. She didn't have time to feel afraid for herself until afterwards, when she realized she was shaking like a pom-pom. She doesn't think being a woman has anything to do with this. She didn't flinch when the general pinned a star on her chest. She loves her breasts as much as some of the men do. She says her training kicked in and her mind wasn't exploding. She told her men to look into her eyes as if they were home on Friday night under their school's football lights. She wanted to pull them out of the fire where they could be all right. This was her first firefight. She did everything she could not to say goodnight. Now I'm feeling what it might have been like. I can't tell her I was a medic once who was never sent to fight. I have no idea what I would do if I were in her shoes, or what I would say afterwards in an interview. She says she wants to go back to school when she gets home. It's a long flight. Her voice is breaking up. I never wanted to re-up, like she says she will do after she earns her degree. She's met one of the men stateside. She doesn't think of herself as saving. He's Larry Spray. He's more than grateful. He was driving on a road he felt could explode. He was trained to know that soldier who pulled him out of his Humvee, no family vehicle, was his brother and sister.
The poem is called The Interview. Gary Margolis joined me from a studio at Middlebury College. His most recent collection of poems is called Fire in the Orchard. If you have any reactions to the stories that you hear here on The Story, you can get in touch with me through our website at thestory.org, or call and leave me a message on our telephone line, 1-888-966-9862. Poems welcome. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Story. Thank you.
The Story is a production of North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.
American Public Media.